What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Today, you have Megan Landris and Sim. And oh my goodness, I just realized I don't know how to pronounce your last name. Can you say it for me?
It's Terwilliger. It's actually how it's spelled. It's just a lot of letters. Terwilliger.
Got it. Okay. Very embarrassing. Great at numbers, not at pronunciation or grammar or anything like that. You would know that if you've gotten an email from me, probably. Now, today we're going to be talking a lot about the differences between financial planners, financial coaching, and sales representatives in the financial space. So we're going to talk about all of those things because I get that question all the time. Like, what kind of person should I be looking for this? Or what kind of person can I trust with my finances? So we're going to talk all the details on that today. But first, before we jump in, anything new with you? Let's do an icebreaker before we jump into it.
Well, the most exciting thing I have going on is I was finally able to take my first vacation since COVID started. I actually was in Europe a couple weeks before the COVID outbreak. And so, yeah, I've been hunkered down at home. I just made it back from Asheville, North Carolina, which is as fun as people told me it would be. But I don't think that's as exciting as what Megan has to share with everyone today.
Well, vacation is great. I'm glad you got to go. How scary would that have been if you were trapped on your vacation spot before or like as COVID was rolling through? So I'm glad you got home. But yeah, so big update for me. I got engaged. So I've been with my boyfriend, Kelly, now fiance, Kelly, for about, a little more than 5 years now. He did a great job surprising me, though, still. I was still shocked. I blacked out for a second, said yes, of course. We already own a house together. So he was already like locked in. Like, I knew that. So now we're making it official. And actually, the student loan planner team, SLP team, was the first group of people I told. I told, like, my mom was there, my sister was there, and I called my grandmother. Student loan planner was like the next people I told because we had a meeting the next day. So that was pretty fun. So
I wish you guys could see her ring. It's so beautiful.
Oh, yep. He did a great job and he did it all by himself. He went and picked it out. I think he had help from like ideas I posted on my Pinterest page, as most girls have some kind of like idea there. But yeah, he had my mom and my sister there. We were actually in Idaho, which never been to Idaho before. We went to Coeur d'Alene, which is a really beautiful town. There's nothing around it. It's just that town. Beautiful mountain views. We went zip lining. We went on the lake. We went out there because my sister is a travel nurse. So she's living that travel nurse lifestyle, pulling her camper behind her from each location. And we take it upon ourselves to create a vacation out of every spot she goes to. So we'll stay with her when we go out and visit.
So congratulations to Megan and great job, Kelly, with the engagement surprise.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Well, let's get into what I'm also passionate about, financial coaching, financial planning. These topics are near and dear, of course, to our hearts because all of us on the student loan planner team are in one of these capacities, except for Travis. I guess Travis is the only one because he's running student loan planner. So that makes sense. But he was in this world. But all of us work for student loan planner a couple days out of the week. And we have our own practices on the outside that we do as well. So maybe let's kick it off with just talking about the difference between a planner, a coach, and a sales representative. And Sim, you could use yourself as an example if you'd like, or kind of dive into the differences there.
Yeah. So like Megan said, all of us on the student loan planner team are in some way, shape, or form involved in the financial services industry. I am a fee-only financial planner. I've always been a fee-only financial planner, and now I also get to do my passion, which is student loan planning. There are some differences, but there's also some overlap between a planner and a coach. I'm going to let Megan talk about the coaching piece because that's what she does. Financial planning is really broad and it can cover a lot of things. And that actually depends on one, what kind of financial planner you are and what kind of work you like to do. You know, what your target group of people is that you're working with. It also is up to the client. What kind of engagement? I know it's kind of a jargony word, but what kind of relationship do you want to have with the financial planner? You know, there can be something short term, longer term. You get to define it. You get to define what areas of help you would like. It can be We call it like defining the scope. So it can be something limited, like I just want help with my cash flow. I just want help with retirement planning. I want help with saving for college. Or you can do what's called comprehensive planning, and you can kind of just cover everything. So there's pros and cons to both. We'll get into all of that today. But planning in a nutshell is it's very broad and it can kind of cover a lot of different topics in your financial life.
Yep. So on the coaching side of things, so that's the space that I'm in. That's the space I'm very passionate about. Coaching, the way I define it, is the step before working with a financial advisor or a financial planner. We're working on the basics in coaching. So that's budgeting, that's paying down debt, student loans even, really setting up, you know, emergency savings. So kind of like the boring stuff, which is so foundational though to your financial life. So that's really what coaching focuses on, is those foundational pieces, the education, you know, how to maintain good credit, how to stay within budget, how to start thinking about retirement and setting money aside for retirement. So those things, but we do not get into the investing. So in my coaching practice, I don't advise on investments as far as like what to invest in. You know, we're talking about savings, of course, and how important that is, and some parameters that we should be thinking about for how much to set aside for things. But that's where you graduate from my program and start working with someone in a more comprehensive investment planning model. Now, the third kind of category is we're labeling them as sales representatives. Do you want to talk about them?
Yeah. So transparency is very big in what we call the fee-only world. I'm a fee-only advisor, so I'm going to be transparent with you guys about my bias against what I'm going to call salespeople. Some of these sales representatives have other titles, right? Some of them call themselves insurance agents. Some of them are registered representatives. Some of them call themselves financial advisors even. These are people who basically earn their living by selling you a product for you to purchase as part of your financial portfolio, so to speak. It's usually like a life or disability insurance policy that combines true asset protection with maybe an investment piece. My bias against that is one, and I guess I'm just jumping right into it, is that I believe that it presents a huge conflict of interest because someone is making money off of what you do. So with a fee-only advisor, I might say to you, hey, I think you need, you know, a $1 million life insurance policy, but I'm not going to sell it to you. So it doesn't matter to me one way or the other if you buy. Of course, it matters to me because I care about your financial well-being, but I don't actually make money off of whether or not you purchase a life insurance policy. Whereas one of these salespeople, registered reps, whatever you want to call them, they do earn a commission based off of what product you buy. And so there might be some incentive there for you to purchase a product that maybe is more expensive or more has more coverage than what you might need.
Yep, I think that's a good overview. And I think we're going to talk about the different titles that some of these individuals can use, because I think that's a lot big question I usually get is, you know, this person says they're X, Y, and Z. What does that mean? Or like, what do they do for me? And, you know, it's a complicated answer because I think those terms, there's not clear-cut terms that have to be used for certain things. There are for maybe some, but so we'll talk a little bit about that. Let's maybe jump into some of the titles. And some of these might actually sound really familiar, but the first, and we'll just kind of piggyback off of the sales representative, is, you know, they could also call themselves an insurance agent. Or what I've also seen is, especially like within State Farm or like captive insurance companies, where if you go and talk to like a State Farm representative, for example, they can only sell you a State Farm policy. They can't go and look at other companies. Same with like Progressive or USAA. They're not what's called a broker that can shop multiple companies across the scope. But I found on LinkedIn, I was doing some LinkedIn surfing before this, that sometimes, you know, those types of entities like State Farm, you could have your own office. They'll call themselves an owner. So that's another term that I've seen. But generally, these types of folks sell and solicit insurance. That might be the only tool in their toolbox, I like to say, where every solution to your problem financially is some kind of insurance product. And so if that's where you feel like you're at right now, could be there's a number of companies that have captive agents where they can only be selling that company's product. If that's why you feel like you're not getting questions answered about student loans or investments or budgeting. Like they keep talking about insurance or disability insurance or, you know, those products. And that's probably why. And insurance is not a bad product. It is, of course, crucial in a financial plan. But when someone's not comprehensive, that's when they might fall under that label.
And I'll be honest with you, in my capacity as a planner, if I've noticed that someone has a policy, like a life insurance policy with a company like State Farm, depending on how recently they bought it, I'll just go back to them and ask them, get three more quotes, and I'll give them some resources where they can find quotes. Because if they're getting something like from State Farm, that means that that agent was not able to shop around for them. And so there might be some improvement that we can get in premium and maybe even in coverage.
To compare, it's kind of like student loan refinancing, where you're looking for a product or solution and cost is a factor. And so with refinancing, we recommend folks shop their refinancing needs to make sure that they're getting the lowest interest rate possible, as long as it's with a good reputable company, of course. Now, same with insurance. You know, it's a crucial part to a financial plan. It should not be the only focus. It's a lot of times the first few foundational pieces as part of a financial plan. So I talk about insurance in my coaching, but that's not the only thing we're talking about. Another term that I have seen used for folks that are insurance licensed or like only insurance licensed would be a financial professional, which that is a very generic term.
So vague. Yeah. What does that mean?
Yep. But let's get into maybe folks that might be more in the investment or securities world. Do you want to read the next one?
Yeah. So the next one's a registered representative. I'm pretty sure at one point I've had that title on my old business card. And I hate that title because it sounds like I sell something. Some people who are registered reps actually do sell products. I was a registered rep because I have what's called a Series 65. That's a securities license. It means I'm only allowed to give investment advice. There's lots of different securities licenses you can have. Some common ones you might hear are the Series 7. That lets people actually like sell different investment products to you. But that's really what the registered representative is covering, is someone who has one of these securities licenses. And there's so many out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A lot of times registered representatives will also be insurance licensed. So they might go at both angles where they help you set up a mutual fund or, you know, what might be within, you know, a Roth IRA, for example, and they'll work with you to set up your insurance policies. Sometimes those are kind of the categories that they stay within. Another general term I kept running into is partner. And I see this a lot at those captive insurance companies. So the, you know, at some point, someone within a registered representative or a financial professional within a captive company gets promoted to a partner. From what I can tell, and you could tell me if you think I'm wrong, Sim, that usually means that they have some management responsibility. So they have folks underneath them that are producing or bringing in their own clients. They're there to manage them. They have a managing role of some kind. So they're doing maybe planning as well, but they have a team underneath them at that point. But do you have any other perspective on that?
I think partner is also another vague term because you can see that with an insurance group. You can also see that, honestly, with a lot of people in the fee-only world. If they own like their own practice with another person, they might want to show off the fact that they broke off from a group and they went solo or they went with another person. So it can apply to them as well. I think it's them trying to flex, hey, I'm a business owner, which isn't a bad thing. It's a great flex to have.
Yeah, for sure. And next we have wealth management advisor.
So that can mean a few things too. In the fee-only financial planning world, this applies to someone who is what we call managing your investments in one example. So again, you can have different relationships with advisors, different scopes. Some people want as much hands-on service as they can possibly get. They don't like thinking about their finances. They don't want to deal with it. What they do is they have a wealth management advisor manage, like, you know, a Roth IRA, a traditional IRA, some accounts, taxable accounts. They handle everything. They buy funds, they sell funds. If you need money, they can clear up some funds for you. They can think about doing that in a tax efficient way. It's kind of how it sounds. They manage your wealth, which is not necessarily for everyone.
Next up, we've got financial planner or financial advisor. We see those quite a bit. You want to elaborate on those?
So a lot of people use financial planner and financial advisor interchangeably, and they sometimes can be interchangeable. But the reason that I chose to call myself a financial planner is because I think that one is the most clear about what I do, which is I plan your finances. I hope that that's kind of the most simple way to explain it. Whereas a financial advisor can cover really any one of these titles we just talked about. A financial advisor could be one of these, you know, salespeople, it could be a financial professional, which whatever that means, that's much broader.
Now, what is something that we've always advocated for? What are the alphabet soup letters that we're looking for when it comes to a financial advisor or financial planner?
So the gold standard would be the CFP designation. That stands for Certified Financial Planner. I have that designation, and let me tell you, it is no joke. I'm sure there's other people who have earned this designation. Maybe they brag about how easy it was, but it is not an easy designation to get. It is a lot of material, hundreds of hours of studying. The CFP board has their own set of ethics that you have to follow and maintain. There's CE that you have to get every year and ethics training that you have to do. So as far as designations go that you're looking for in the financial planner, that's the one to look for.
Yeah. And that was something that was really important to Travis with Student Loan Planner, is he wanted a team of folks that were passionate about student loans. That was, you know, number one, like you had to have that passion, that raw curiosity about student loan repayment, because things are always changing. So you need to learn stuff every day, as y'all know. But also he wanted the CFP designation. So that's just a really quick way to tell where somebody's interests lie. And that's where the fiduciary word comes into play. So a fiduciary standard is the responsibility of a CFP. So we'll get into that a little bit more.
Megan, real quick, can I tell you it's actually not a fun fact. It's a sad fact about the CFP. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to get it when I first got into the industry. An abysmal 23%, maybe it's 25% now, of all CFP holders are women. So we are very underrepresented in the field. And so for me, when I learned that, you know, as a young paraplanner, kind of working my way up, I was like, I need to get this. And, you know, it took me a couple of years, but I was determined because I wanted to, you know, kind of break that glass ceiling and encourage other women to kind of enter the profession too.
And I do think that there's more coming into the profession. I think there was a statistic from the CFP board about how there has been an uptick in, not reversing quite yet, but women having a higher or a larger presence. What I was going to mention, I almost forgot, was I think it's kind of funny, and I think we've talked about this maybe before on the podcast, but within the CFP training, student loans have maybe like a couple pages in our education requirement.
On my exam, I still remember the exam because it's two parts, 85 questions each. I remember like it was yesterday. I think I got one question on student loans.
Wow. Yeah. I was going to say, I think one or two questions, it is not a focus on the CFP exam. That's why I was going to mention the next kind of titles or the next things to maybe look out for, or like specialties. So there are specialty licenses or specialty certifications like the CSLP or the Certified Student Loan Professional, which most of our team has as well. And that tells you that that individual has gone and done education specifically in that area of planning. And there's a few others.
There's so many different designations, which is why you kind of want to start with the gold standards and you can kind of pile on from there.
Yeah. So the specialty, yeah, certainly important if you're looking for someone specifically for one purpose. Like for student loans, find a CSLP because they have a financial planning background, but they also have the specific education in student loan repayment. So that's what I wanted to end the financial professional titles with. And that may not be all of them. We may have missed some, but I think we touched on the big ones. Now let's go into a little bit more about compensation and how some of these different titles are compensated. Let's start with what is fee only? What is fiduciary? I'll throw that to you.
Yeah. So fiduciary is one of those, again, jargony industry terms. It means that that individual, that planner, is putting your needs above their own. And so someone who is functioning in a sales capacity is not necessarily a fiduciary because they get something out of that transaction. Fee only. So there's fee only and there's fee based. They are not the same. People use them interchangeably, but you want to focus on the word only. Fee only is kind of how it sounds. That planner is compensated strictly by fees. So again, doesn't matter if you listen to their advice, you can tell them to kick rocks. It doesn't really matter to them. They're still going to get paid the same. Whereas fee based, that person is kind of wearing two hats. They're kind of working in two different roles. So in one role, they're kind of fee only. They're just giving you advice. And then they put on their sales hat and they can still sell you products. So fee based means sometimes they're working on fees. Sometimes they're compensated by fees and sometimes they're not. So fee only, again, in my opinion, and I recognize my bias here, but fee only is, if you're going to work with a planner, is the way to go.
And there are different forms of compensation too. So there's hourly, there's monthly subscription models, which are becoming more popular. I think Dan's practice works off of a monthly subscription model. There's retainer, there's assets under management or AUM. So I'll tell you what I do as a coach. So I charge a flat fee for a 12-month engagement with me. Would that fall under retainer, I guess? Or subscription?
That's retainer. That's yeah. Kind of a retainer. It depends, I guess, if you're charging it like all up front or like a percentage and a percentage later.
Yeah. So my process, I keep pretty simple. I charge one fee for my golden financial coaching package. I call the post-grad financial framework. I charge one fee for that. And it's the same for everybody.
That's retainer. That's the retainer model. So there's kind of pros and cons to all of these models. And again, it really comes back to what do you as the client want out of that engagement? So hourly can be great for somebody who wants to keep the engagement very limited or doesn't necessarily have the funds to do a different kind of engagement, because hourly really probably is the cheapest way to go. And sometimes that's a starting point. So you can go hourly and maybe you just really like the planner or you want to come back later. Sometimes you'll get a discount, but it's a good way to start. Monthly subscription model, that's a newer one and I'm not as familiar with it, but I do know that that's another way to, again, help people get access to financial planning. It's another way to be able to afford that because sometimes it's easy to pay kind of on a monthly basis. And I think subscriptions can be fun too. I mean, maybe people think of financial planning subscriptions as fun, but depends if you're a financial nerd or not. Retainer is also very straightforward. I've worked on that model as well. It's kind of how Megan described it. It's a flat fee. In the planning world, sometimes you pay that quarterly. Some people want to pay that annually. That's between you and the advisor. Then there's assets under management. I think with, I would say maybe my cohort of planners, like the new generation of planners, we're not doing that as much. I think of all of the forms of compensation you could receive as a fee-only advisor, AUM is probably the one that has the most potential conflict. So I don't want to say that, you know, fee-only is conflict-free. All forms of planning, there's always, everybody has a conflict. It's just how much of a conflict are you willing to accept? And I think fee-only is much less than someone who's sales-based. But with the AUM, the conflict there is that that advisor is getting paid based on a percentage of assets that they're managing. And so there can be an incentive there for them to want you to transfer your assets to them when not everybody needs that level of service. And again, some people do. Some people really love that hands-on, but that's just a conflict to be aware of. The great thing about fee-only planners is that in their what's called ADV brochures, this is like their disclosures that you're supposed to receive, it should outline any potential conflicts of interest. So that should all be there. A lot of people don't read these documents because they can be long and jargony, even though the requirement is that they're supposed to be written in what's called plain man's English. But you do get this brochure at the start of the engagement. You can read it. And if you don't like what you see, then you don't have to work with that person. But always look for that. I always encourage people because, you know, in my capacities working with student loan planner, I also tell people, like I educate people about the different types of advisors out there. And I'll ask them, oh, well, is your the person you're working with, are they fee only? And they say, I don't know. So I'll tell them, go on the website and download the ADV. In my opinion, I think it's a huge red flag if a firm does not post their ADV online. To me, that seems like, what are you trying to hide? It seems like, what are you trying to sell me on? And convince me that you're worth working with instead of letting me read about you ahead of time.
Yeah, that's a great point. The transparency is important. And I think the compensation is of course, a form of transparency. And that's all of these things are just really important when it comes to working with someone who's going to be managing or handling your money in some way or your financial, not decisions necessarily, but helping you achieve those financial goals. So, you know, these are all just tips to, like, you know what to look out for, know what titles might mean certain things, know what compensation might mean for one advisor compared to another type of how another advisor could be compensated. But also, I'd like to also talk about the relationship and the feel that you have working with someone. I have met CFPs, fee-only folks that I would not trust with my money. I've also met sales representatives like an insurance agent that I trust emphatically to do the right thing if I send someone to look at life insurance for. So it's really about the relationship too and the trust factor that you have with that individual. And so kind of going back to like shopping for refinancing or shopping for insurance rates, like shop your financial advisor. You know, that relationship needs to be there. That trust needs to be there. You need to feel comfortable with how they're compensated, their practices, their process. Like what kind of process do they take you through? You know, ask those questions. What are you going to help me accomplish? You know, these are my goals. Can you help me accomplish those goals as far as modeling it out or helping me get the plan to get there? So that's another big, big part. It's not just about these titles or just about how they're compensated. It's also about the feel and the relationship, I would say.
I think the relationship is so important because, like I mentioned, with fee-only advisors or planners, we don't sell insurance products, but people need, you know, in some capacity, you need some insurance products. You might need disability insurance, life insurance. How do we help people with that? Well, the fee-only advisor can kind of analyze, hey, I think you need like this much coverage, for either policy. But a lot of us have developed relationships with people we trust. These are people who do sell policies. And it's really important that we trust, hey, they're not going to try to sell our client the wrong thing. I've developed relationships with a couple of people. The way that they were able to get my trust was what I would do is I would send them, if a client already had an insurance policy, I would send it to them, be like, what do you think? And then they would send me, this one guy I worked with, he would send me like a 5-paragraph write-up of what he thought about it. And, you know, sometimes he would be like, this is a great policy. I can't do anything better than this. Or he would point out like, hey, this person lives in this state and they need to get coverage because they have a dog on their property. Like they would point out like really niche things that I wouldn't know to look for. So that's another question. If you are working with a fee-only planner, ask them, who do they have relationships with in the industry? So something else that I tell people to do with anything, if you're shopping for like a student loan refinance, a house refinance, or like a life and disability policy, I tell people get at least 3 quotes. And that way you can see, is one quote kind of a standout? Like, is it just, you know, is it much more expensive or is one a lot cheaper? Or are you kind of getting the same quotes? Because I am very concerned about conflicts of interest with life and disability insurance. There's only a few resources that I do trust. Some of these are individuals that I have developed relationships with. We also have resources on our website. I don't sell insurance, so I don't get anything by directing you there, but I trust Travis and our team and these resources that we've built together. So let that be part of one of the quotes that you get. If you want to check out our website, it's under recommended, right, Megan, or it's under tools.
Yeah, it's under recommended. You could shop quotes for disability, life insurance. There's a lot of things under that section, like practice loans, of course, student loan refinancing. There's a few other things, but that's a great tool to have in your toolbox when you're shopping these things to get a lay of the land for what options are out there.
And I've spoken with, you know, some clients that we've worked with at Student Loan Planner. And it sounds like, in my opinion, a lot of the quotes that these people are getting are very competitive. So I think it's worth checking out.
Yeah, for sure. Now, so we talked about fee only, we talked about fee-based advisors, we talked about sales representatives, these types of individuals. So usually fee only or fee-based, they could also help with student loans. So what you want to look for when you're seeking out an individual or an advisor to maybe help with both finances and student loans is ideally you want to look for that CSLP designation or Certified Student Loan Professional designation, or hire us, selfish plug.
But we know what we're doing.
Yeah. And we do commonly work collaboratively with advisors where advisors across the country will book a consultation with us, either with or without their client on the call, to help navigate the student loan piece to their financial plan that they're building for their client. So we do collaborate quite a bit. But, you know, if you're looking for someone on the outside of Student Loan Planner, the CSLP is a really great way to just know that they went through the education content that's going to tell them like the legal side of student loan planning, the legal background, I should say, and the financial planning side of things. So not just like the facts, but how to really navigate repayment in an efficient way, building that into a financial plan. So they've got the comprehensive knowledge. So CSLP, you can actually search CSLPs on the CSLA website as well. and most of us on the team have that designation already. Let's talk now a little bit about downsides to fee-only advisors. Let's elaborate a little bit more on fee-only advisor downsides. Do you want to take that one off?
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about the downsides of AUM because that can encourage an advisor to or incentivize them to want to manage your investments when maybe that's not the type of service that you need. Also, fee-only advisors, if you're not working on an hourly basis, it can be expensive. You are paying for someone's time and expertise. And that's a problem. That's something that's kind of near and dear to my heart, is wanting to make financial planning more accessible for people. It's just not accessible for everyone because it can be expensive. I know that that sometimes can be an encouragement to people to work with a sales-based person because you don't see the commission. But just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not there. But that is one of the downsides.
And I think to add one downside to like AUM compensation is, you know, there may be some bias against you withdrawing funds, like taking funds away from the account in some way, like moving to a different company or starting to withdraw for a goal of yours, whatever that is. So there's always going to be those conflicts. It's just better if they're more transparent about those conflicts.
And if you ever feel like the planner that you're working with is giving you pushback and you feel like it's not in your interest, don't be afraid to fire them. I know some people hire like, oh, that was my friend's planner. That was, you know, Grandpa Joe's planner. I've seen that a lot. Just don't be afraid to say no. It's your financial well-being. And sometimes, you know, the vibe's off, and that's legitimate too.
Yeah. It's okay to say no, or it's okay to to fire. It's totally fine.
Decouple that relationship.
Yep. And there are some websites you can go to look at just regulatory information on people, or I guess oversight as to if someone has gotten a complaint in the past. So there's one website, it's FINRA, F-I-N-R-A, broker check. And you can look up any registered representative to see if they've had any kind of complaints against them in the past, any negative things that someone should be aware of if they're managing money. And is there any other that you know of?
Well, it goes back to the ADV because you're required to disclose that as well. So do the FINRA broker check, but also actually read the ADV because that's supposed to be in there. People gloss over that.
And there's also a couple organizations that are very strict about the types of members that they allow within that organization. So if you know if they're a member of that entity, you know that they're at least checking one of the boxes that you're looking for. So XYPN is one. Are you part of XYPN right now?
I'm part of NAPFA.
Okay.
NAPFA, I'm a little bit biased about them because they are so rigorous and stringent with their ethics requirements that I actually think, yes, hire someone who's a CFP, but also look to see if they're with NAPFA, because in my opinion, NAPFA has higher ethics requirements than the CFP board. Please don't sue me for saying that.
Just your opinion.
That's my opinion.
Yeah. And NAPFA is N-A-P-F-A.
National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. So everybody on there is a fee-only planner. I will say, in my opinion, I think XYPN has a much nicer website and it's easier to find someone to work with. NAPFA was kind of, last I heard anyway, they were doing some changes to their website. And I have heard some complaints from people who are trying to find an advisor through NAPFA, but that's a great place. You can at least check to see if that planner is a part of that.
XYPN has a similar feel in the sense that to be a member of XYPN, you have to be a fee-only advisor. There is a process for someone to get onboarded into that membership. It is a newer organization, so maybe that's why. I think NAPFA has been around longer than XYPN, but XYPN is also attracting a lot of new generation advisors. XYPN is actually where I met Travis back in 2019. We went to an XYPN conference. I was there representing the CSLP designation to advisors, and Travis was there as, I think, a spectator. So it attracts like a young, and I guess I'm calling myself young, but I was just saying that's the relationship I have with it so far.
The other thing I love about the XYPN website, and that's usually the website I send to people as much as I love NAPFA. What's great about XYPN is not only can you find an advisor just geographically, but when you look on an advisor's profile, you can see right off the bat, how are they charging fees? You can see what model they're in. So you don't waste your time reaching out to them if you're looking for someone hourly, but they don't offer hourly, for example. And I also remember, I don't know if they still do this, Megan, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I also remember being able to look by like certain specialties. Like Some advisors work with the military. Some advisors work with women business owners.
I think you can. Yeah. One last thing I think I wanted to touch on is just the fact that just like a lot of other professions where there are specialty areas or niches that they focus on, financial advisors have those as well. So I think along these things that we've discussed today, finding the right fit from a scope of services perspective, from a compensation perspective, from a process and relationship perspective, it also might be worth seeking out someone who speaks your language, you know, whether that be you being in tech, that advisor focuses on tech folks, or you being a federal employee. Find an advisor that maybe specializes in federal employees because they'll speak your language. They probably know about the benefits or they know about the typical lifestyle or the typical trajectory of someone's career in that sector. So sometimes that's a good thing to look out for as well, those niche areas of planning that an advisor might focus on specifically.
Yeah. And I want to comment on financial coaching too, because I have so much respect, one, for you, Megan, and for other financial coaches, because when you were explaining what you do and how you focus on a lot of the fundamentals, for me, you called that boring. I was like, yes, for me, that is not one of my favorite parts of planning, is because I tend to be a very numbers person too. And so when I put a plan together for someone, I'm like, of course, all you have to do is this and this and you're set for retirement, like very simple. That takes out some of the behavioral parts of it. And I'm not very good at that. And if I'm working with someone who is having a hard time implementing the plan, that's because we have to go back to basics. And I think that's such a great area for a financial coach to kind of step in and help people with that piece.
Yeah. So maybe let's end this with a couple quick like bullet points or facts to maybe filter you into a bucket of what kind of advisor, depending on where you're at in life or what you're looking for in an advisor, who should you be seeking out? So let's talk about who should be seeking out maybe a fee-only advisor. What are some bullet points that you had put there for characteristics of that person or goals?
Yeah. So one would be if someone wants like investment advice, because that's in our wheelhouse. If someone wants a very detailed, comprehensive plan covering all areas of your financial life, if you want to work with someone who specializes kind of in your niche, like Megan was talking about, you know, if you want to work with someone who only works with doctors, for example, you'll find a fee-only professional who does that.
Anything you would say you would not want to be seeking out a fee-only advisor? Any characteristics that would make you want to stray away from that avenue, probably?
I think if you, well, one, if you can't afford it, if the price point is inaccessible, then, you know, I certainly wouldn't recommend that. If you're also just kind of starting out with building some financial behaviors, if you, maybe if you're what we'll call a newbie, if you don't know some of the basics, you don't know about credit, you don't know about saving, you don't know what a high yield savings account is, some of the basics, or if you need someone to help you build some habits. Right? Get into the habit of saving, knowing where your money's going. Is your spending in line with your values? That's a great piece to work on with a coach.
Yeah. And I think that's a great avenue, like some bullet points for when to seek out a coach is, I'd say like lifetime wise, like pretty recently out of school, within the first couple of years of your career, trying to figure things out financially. You need help with a budget. You need help with just habits, like you said. You know, we don't have maybe the investable assets or the money to start investing yet. We just need to figure out how to put all the financial pieces together. That's a great place. Those are some characteristics for someone who might want to be seeking out a financial coach. People who would not be good fits for coaching would be, I would say, just because I do see this a lot, those who are only looking for credit repair. I get a lot of those requests where I'll get asked, you know, do you help me rebuild my credit? And we talk about how to maintain good credit and habits to have good credit and things, quick things we could fix, like reducing your utilization rate, for example, on credit cards, stuff like that. But we're not credit repair folks, usually, unless that is someone's niche. Other things, if you have legal issues like bankruptcy issues, or you're at the point where maybe bankruptcy should be entertained, that's more of an attorney. And maybe some other, like another more positive example is just if you need help with investing, a financial coach is not the good place for you to go, because we're not going to be talking about where you should be investing your funds. And then just to round out the three kind of categories we focused on today, when would be the right time, or what are the right circumstances for someone to reach out to a sales representative?
I think if you need a life insurance or disability insurance policy, kind of have in mind what you're looking for and have an idea of how much it should cost. Get a few quotes, but they're the ones who are going to sell that product to you.
Yep. I think the specific need, the need for that product, I think that's the time to seek out a sales representative. And bullet points for when to not seek out a sales representative is if you need or you would like more comprehensive planning. Usually they're not going to be able to talk to you about student loans or saving and investing, financial habits, things like that.
I encourage people to think about the insurance piece. We call it asset protection. I don't like to think of it as wealth building, because some of these products are structured in a way to, I guess, convince people like you can use this to do both. I like to generally, for most people, separate the two pieces. So let your asset protection be asset protection. Let your wealth building be wealth building.
That's a great point. I think we also have a good blog article on our website about that topic that I think Rob wrote. So search on our website too about insurance content. You could do the little search bar on our website for blog articles that we've written on these different topics to help you make those decisions or help educate you in those areas if that's an area of need that you need to be focusing on. So, wow, we went through a lot. Anything we missed?
I think that you could also hire a coach or a planner if you need a second opinion, if you're trying to check up on someone you're working with. That's kind of my last point, is sometimes brief engagements are still worthwhile, just to be like, okay, this person I'm working with is actually like advising me correctly.
Yes, that's another great option as well, if needed or desired. Well, I think that rounds out our conversation today. Hopefully this helps distinguish some of the titles that you commonly hear, or maybe some questions that you might have had about different financial professionals in the industry. Certainly let us know if you have questions. Shoot us a message at help@studentloanplanner.com. And if you need a student loan plan, we're your gals. We're your team. We'll catch you in the next one.
Thanks, guys.